Hello, 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 and welcome to a very special episode of the Rangers Rundown, the internet's first and only Taylor Hearn appreciation podcast. Tonight I am Max, as I very often am, and I am joined by Hayden.
Hello.
Mike.
Good evening.
And our very special guest this evening, Mr. Michael Tepid.
Hey guys, what's happening?
How are you doing tonight?
Not bad, not bad at all. What's going on?
What's going on is that Frisco is still playing baseball, and I think Texas just gave up today. So we're going to watch John Hernandez through four innings, no runs, two walks, six strikeouts, so that's fun. I'm sure Texas just declined to play. I think they were in one of those Yankee states playing against some version of the Mets. I'm sure they won that game. Don't even need to bother checking. Right? There wasn't anything weird that happened, like a 122-mile-an-hour home run to Giancarlo Stanton.
Strong, yes. Strong man right there. Strong man.
Nice exit velo, yes.
The one highlight you need to be familiar with is Ariel Jurado, just added to StatCast's general library. Just doing what he can to push the bounds of science. Has he always worn the glasses, Tepid?
No. No, I've never seen him in the glasses.
Wow.
I don't understand the glasses. I've seen him in street clothes, obviously. He doesn't wear glasses. And I asked some guys in Frisco, I said, hey, does he wear contacts? Said, no. And I said, okay. So did he get glasses? Did he get prescription glasses when he got up there? You know, sometimes, honestly, you know what it may be? Is he's one of those, you hear this sometimes, is that guys talk about like a lot of glare from the big league lights. I've had this conversation with guys. Maybe that's what it is. It would be even cooler if he got like some yellow tinted glasses or maybe some orange tinted glasses.
Get some like gamer glasses.
Yeah. Get some 70s style like actual eyeglasses instead of these sportsy looking things. I think that would be far more intimidating. Certainly, I mean, a guy like Giancarlo would probably just stand there and be laughing so hard that he maybe couldn't hit a RPG 122 miles an hour off of you. But that's new to me. I mean, I don't think that he has glasses, but maybe he got up there and got an eye test and decided he needed them, or maybe they're for glare, or I don't know, but somebody needs to ask him. We need to get in touch with the beat writers and say, what's with these glasses?
Maybe Jesse Chavez got in his ear before he left.
I think Chavez is one of those guys who does that for the glare.
Yeah.
Well, he had the shades.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chavez. So on this podcast, we all very clearly predicted that Chavez would be very good this season. We were all humongous fans of the Jesse Chavez signing.
I feel like that's facetious, but okay.
Yeah, we were really big on him. But he brought back glasses as well. I think Tyler Thomas has like big specs in his.
Yeah, Tyler Thomas actually has glasses. Yeah, like he actually wears real glasses. Which, I mean, listen, Tyler is a 6'1", 170-pound lefty who throws 88. So you can take any kind of distraction that you can provide the hitter, any kind of advantage that you can conceivably get, you look for that. And Tyler has very cool glasses, and I've heard that he is a pretty stylish cat. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. And I guess he's pitching okay for Hickory, and that's a guy. He's a long shot. I mean, when you have that kind of stuff, you're a long shot. But if you have And everything that I've heard from guys in the industry say that he's got great command. He's got 65, 70 command. If you're going to throw 88 to 90, you need 75 to 80 grade command. You need some Kyle Hendricks caliber command. So we'll see what he does as he advances. But, yeah, him and his glasses will hopefully be working their way up the farm system pretty soon.
Well, that is fun to hear. He's at 95 strikeouts to 18 walks so far this season across South Bend and Hickory, all in the A ball level, so we'll be keeping a sharp eye on Tyler Thomas's eyes as he moves his way up the minor league rung. It's always fun to hear. Right. So I guess that kind of leads us pretty naturally into talking about some of the guys that Texas got back in trades in July. So Tyler Thomas, of course, came over in the first trade with the Cubs for Jesse Chavez. The second trade with the Cubs is probably the bigger headline one, although I guess there's reason to believe that the return there might not be particularly more robust than Tyler Thomas. So as of now, it's Raleigh Lacy, pitcher with Down East, and a player to be named later of dubious quality.
Yeah, I mean,
fair assessment.
Yeah, I mean, based on everything that I'm hearing, I'm excited about the player. I think that it could be kind of a mid-range prospect. I'm hoping, you know, and the thing is, I've heard some guys who have said it's probably an org player, and then other guys have said it's a guy with a decent shot. But then again, you look at somebody like Lacey. I got four reports on him, and two said he's an org player, and two said they have big league grades on him. So, you know, we'll just have to see. And I mean, I wasn't anticipating a lot for Hamels. I mean, I really wasn't. I don't think that most people were that had seen him pitch. And also, given his age, given his contract, given you know, some of his medicals over the last, you know, year and a half or 2 years, and some of the peripherals and a lot of the data. Apparently, digging into the data on Hollywood, as all big league teams do, to a level that we can't even begin to wrap our brains around, the data wasn't all that favorable. Matter of fact, it was downright unfavorable in many instances. So I think that whatever the Rangers could get from him is great, and if they can go forward without having, you know, that $20 million on the books for next year, then they were willing to do that. So we'll just see. I think that as far as the trades go, I don't think that there's much of a doubt at this point that the big win is, if there's going to be if you can judge these things on wins or losses and grades and all that stuff, I think that the one that has the best possibility is obviously Kella to the Pirates and getting back what could conceivably be a big league starter. And that's best case scenario whenever you're trading someone. But then again, you traded, that was their best commodity. Outside of trading Nomar Mazara or someone like that, trading Keone Kella, who's a proven big league closer at this point with 2 years of control left, that was their best chip. That's a better chip than Hollywood Hamels. Yeah. And I think that what you saw back in terms of the return definitely, you know, kind of solidifies that and backs up that opinion that Kella was a better trade chip than almost anybody that they have. And I saw Taylor pitch and it was great. I mean, it was an absolute ball. I went into that game, I got to be honest, fellas, I went into that game thinking this dude may just crap the bed tonight. Like, I don't know if we can cuss. Can we cuss? I'm a cussing sailor, so I'm trying not to, but
you can do whatever you want.
Okay, exactly. Good. All right, yeah.
This is your podcast.
This is cable? All right. This is cable? All right.
It's a pay-per-view, yeah.
Great. Okay, good.
Gosh darn podcast with your millennial words.
Dang it, podcast. Well, I have gotten, and I'm sure you guys probably have too, you know, in response to the podcast, but I have gotten more than a handful of emails and certainly tweets from folks asking me not to cuss in my writing, which is fine. I understand where they're coming from. It's just I'm an old punk, so it's hard for me to actually eradicate it from my system altogether. But yeah, when I saw Taylor pitch, I went into that game with pretty low expectations just for that game. Now, I went into the game with high expectations for him as a person, because the scouting reports that I got, I got to tell you, they didn't really jive with the stuff I was reading. You know, I'm reading this kind of lukewarm stuff that was, a lot of stuff was predicting, you know, bullpen guy. And then I'm talking to scouts and just kind of texting scouts. That's a pretty crazy night, as you may well imagine. I know guys, plenty of guys who didn't go to bed at all Monday night and Tuesday. You know, I mean, you're getting calls from teams at 2 a.m. They'll get a wild idea. I guess the trade deadline was 3:00 here on a Tuesday, and they may have gotten a wild idea at 2 a.m, and they'll call you. They'll call a team and see if they can get somebody on the phone, because everybody was working. I mean, you were pretty much just, you were in the office and you were working and you were going through stuff. And when I started getting the reports back on Hearn, they just really didn't jive with a lot of the stuff that was written. I mean, I had guys telling me, this guy's got big league starter shit. Like, this guy could be a four. I mean, this could be a big league, you know, every fifth day type guy, you know, with a floor of good reliever. Mm-hmm. So it was really, really encouraging. But having said all that, there was so much on him in terms of coming home, in terms of, I mean, I got to tell you, you probably had 30 people there that's what it looked like anyways. Yeah. I mean, it was a huge cheering squad, and they were loud, and everybody knew kind of where they were, and okay, that's Taylor's family, and they were all sitting, you know, to where he could see them every time he was walking back to the dugout, and they were all really, really positive and really encouraging, and it was really a kind of a magical night. They gave him a standing ovation. The whole stadium gave him a standing O when he walked off the mound in the sixth.
Wow, nice.
Yeah, it was really cool because that just doesn't happen at the minor league level. That crowd that night, I got to tell you, that crowd that night was pretty into it because, side note, they gave Hearn a standing O. They cheered quite loudly for Wei J's Frisco debut. And there was a handful of boos when they introduced Osuna, who no one knew was pitching.
Wow.
And he came in, and there were a few people that, as soon as they heard
that's a knowledgeable crowd.
Yeah, at the minor league level, that's pretty badass. Like, it triggered, as soon as they heard the name, it triggered, oh, hey, that's that SOB that, oh, okay, boo, and it was really great, you know? It was a pretty solid crowd that night, and to have all of that pressure on Taylor, you know, and like I said, coming home, pitching for your childhood, you're in the farm system now for your favorite childhood team, and then having all that family there. If he'd have gone 1 1/3 and given up 4 earned, I don't think anybody would have really been surprised. But he did not do that. He was throwing the fastball is legit. He was 94-96 for the first two innings. Lost some velo as he went. I think a lot of that was adrenaline based. I mean, I think he'll probably sit more comfortably in the 92-95 range. If Taylor would have just really wet the bed that night, I don't think anybody would have been completely shocked. I mean, it was a lot to put on a kid, and there was a lot going on, and it was a Friday night in the park too, and it's getting towards the end of the summer, so attendance kind of spikes towards the end of the summer because I think a lot of people sort of have that last gasp of taking the kiddos out to places, and within the minor leagues, anyways, you know, you usually get a last push of things, you know, of folks who show up and have a great time, and you know, so it was a Friday night and it was electric, and it was just a lot of fun to be at the park that night. And yeah, he was 94-96. Like I said, it's really easy cheese. I mean, the two things that struck me were how big he is. I mean, he's listed at 6'5", 210. I'd say he's probably 220, and it looks like he could add another 15 to 20 pounds and wouldn't be overweight at all. Like, he's very, very broad. Like, he's kind of lanky right now, but his shoulders just go straight across. And the velocity is easy. It does not look like he's throwing 94-96 miles an hour at all. I mean, it's super easy, and
nice.
You know, it's fun to watch when you see guys like that. I mean, it's one of those where he's throwing 94-96, but based on the delivery and the mechanics, you know, there's 198 in there anytime he wants it. But I think that he'll sit, like I said, probably closer to 92-95 as he goes forward. The changeup is good. Changeup's going to miss bats. And the slider's decent. He got, in the fifth inning, he got two swinging Ks on sliders. You know, it's hard. It's a little bit, it doesn't have a lot of depth to it, which he's going to need. He's going to need to learn how to put that on people's back foot. You know, it's one of those that kind of starts wide. You know, like to a right-handed hitter, it starts out in that left-handed batter's box and bends back in to the strike zone. He's going to have to learn how to command that pitch a little bit better. And certainly, it, you know, when he gets 1-2, when he gets 0-2 in counts, you want to put that on a righty's back foot and just kind of see if you can get him to swing over it. So, I didn't really see a whole lot of those, but that's something for him to work on. And he'll be added to the 40-man this winter. So.
Cool.
He was a lot of fun. He's the real deal, and I hope that he's a starting pitcher for the Rangers in years to come.
Yeah, I think only he and one other, maybe Wei J, are the ones that have to be added to the 40-man. Is that correct?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I think so. So Wei J's interesting too. I mean, I think best case scenario, the Rangers just swiped a kind of a middle reliever. Yeah, I think that the role that I kind of put on him was something very similar to what Tony Barnett's done. For the last few years, that seventh inning guy, not overpowering, but he's got enough stuff to miss some bats and to get his team back in the dugout after quick outs. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, he'll get some strikeouts because he's got a ridiculous changeup.
He's got the north south one, right?
Yeah, and it's just incredible.
That's my favorite. I love that.
It's a hell of a pitch, man.
Being an older guy, if you remember Aaron Seeley back in the day.
Of course, yeah.
Man, he had his changeup was unbelievable.
No, he broke out the changeup. He's got a good curve that he got a ridiculous swing and miss on, and the fastball was 92 to 94 that night.
I read somebody today, I don't remember who it was, if it was you or Kevin or Scott Lucas or somebody, but they said
those guys are idiots. Don't listen to them.
His changeup was like one of the best minor league pitchers they've ever seen. So that really caught my attention. So you have eyes on it, and it's
pretty filthy. I mean, I tweeted that I think that it might be the best off-speed pitch in the Rangers farm system. It's up there with, the only other one is Krause's slider, which is aggressively filthy. Like, that's the one that's earning him the nickname of Pigpen, which I'm fine with. I think that's hilarious, you know, because it's that filthy. Like, it's a hell of a pitch.
And he's almost a cartoon as it is, so.
Yeah, he is. He really is, man. He's just so fun. I can't wait to meet him. I mean, I talked to him very, very briefly in surprise, but I can't wait to really talk to him because, by all accounts, he's got a little bit of that same thing, very similar personality-wise to what Odor has, in that off the field, they're very, you know, almost somewhat quiet, very polite.
Interesting.
Yeah, you know, not at all what happens to them. And then in between the lines, a switch flips and they're sociopaths, you know. But because Rugi was always like that. I mean, the Rugi's rehab assignment this year was the first time he hasn't called me sir, ever. I mean, he was always so, so polite. And then...
Well, I hope you called him out on it.
I pretty much did, yeah. Yeah, because he's a dad, so we just talked about our kids, and he was so proud and, you know, so happy. I guess his daughter was only about a month and a half old at the time, but anyways. But, yeah, Wei-Jay's changeup is filthy. I mean, it really is a hell of a pitch, and it's super, super destructive to lefties. I mean, it's a pitch that really gives them an advantage against lefties because it has – not only does it dip down – but it fades tremendously too. So, you know, I mean, it kind of moves on two planes. You know, it not only is it going east-west, but it is going north-south, and that's what makes it a devastating pitch. And the curveball's fine. And, yeah, I mean, if they got a middle reliever out of that, you know, that's
great.
Good. You know, you'll take it. You'll take big leaguers in exchange for big leaguers. So, yeah, I think that as far as off-speed pitches go, it's tough to find another pitch that's going to generate that many whiffs for an off-speed pitch. I mean, it's probably a 70 grade, maybe on some days a 75 for some scouts, but you know, there's not a lot of those going around.
So you would you say Tony Barnett as a reliever, but is he going to have either Barnett's very interesting and good hair or Barnett's very interesting and good delivery? Because that's what I'm interested in.
Yes, like on the delivery, no on the hair. One of the first things that will strike you, just very similarly to where when I got face to face with Taylor Hearn, I was kind of struck by how much bigger he was than what I thought and how much bigger he can get. Wei-Jay is barely there. He is the dude is barely there. I mean, he's listed at 160. That's almost always wrong on a minor leaguer. Like, I think someone asked me the other day, because Joe Palumbo is listed at like 190, and I'm like, no, he's over 200 pounds, you know, and Wei-Jay might be 160, maybe 170. Like, he is 6'1 and thin. I mean, he is a thin guy, but yeah, he's got fun delivery, and if I'm not mistaken, we were kind of talking about it afterwards, I think he's got a couple of different pauses that he can work in.
Perfect.
To his delivery, yeah, a couple of those Barnett, you know, the Asian style that you see so many Asian pitchers have, different pauses and different ways to affect the batter's timing, which I am a huge fan of. I think that that's great. And a guy like Wei-Jay is, and they're going to try and stretch him out. So my understanding is they're going to try and go a couple innings with him each time, which the Rangers may be looking, they may be building a sort of a cachet of guys who can go 2 to 3 innings, like the one time through the order type pitchers. Yeah, I mean, I can think of...
The Rays have been doing to...
What's that?
Success. The Rays have been targeting those kind of players, so it's worked out very well for them so far this year.
Yeah.
I think it's a new inefficiency when it comes to relievers. Everyone knows that you want to go after those 98-mile-an-hour demons, like, you know, even the Jake Diekmans or the real top-end guys who can go out there and gas it. But there's, I think, a lot of value to be had in your Alex Claudios who can go out there and give you 5 or 6 or 7 outs.
Right.
That's where the short rotations are kind of moving towards.
Yeah, and Texas has, I mean, they've got several of those guys on the 40-man now. I think that, you know, once Wei Jay gets on there, he's a guy who can do that. I think ultimately that may be the, currently, I would say that may be the best case scenario for Brett Martin.
That's who I was about to ask about.
Yeah, I think that that's where we're headed. If not, just a one-inning guy, like a middle reliever, which is not ideal. But this is a couple seasons in a row of him, you know, kind of not having the level of command that we would have liked. And he's a big fella, and he just sort of struggles to repeat his delivery. And he also changed his off-speed pitch this year. So he deserves a little bit more patience. He had always used a curveball, and they converted both him and Mike Machuela, who's now hurt again. That's a whole nother podcast. But they converted both of those guys into slider pitchers. And I like Brett's slider. I've seen it many times now, and I like it. I think it's a good pitch. It's hard, and it breaks late. And it's got a great deal of promise. So I think that by this time next year, he'll have a much better feel for it, having changed to it kind of in the middle of the season this year. But he may be one of those guys. I'm hoping for more. We can all hope for more from someone like Jonathan Hernandez, but he may ultimately turn into a one-time through the rotation reliever, one of these guys who could go 2 or 3 innings, and somebody like Wei Jay. So yeah, there's quite a few guys that are kind of fitting that profile. I don't know. Texas hasn't publicly stated, to my knowledge. I mean, I don't know. Have they said anything about how they're looking at that going forward? Is that public?
I know there's been some discussion about, like, tandem pitchers, and I think Wong was one of the guys who was referenced there, but...
I read this morning, and they were talking about the possibility of that happening, and this is pure speculation on the internet, that the Rangers might be trying this once the rosters are expanded in September, bringing up some of these guys and trying some of that.
Yeah, I mean, they've definitely got some guys who can do it.
Is Connor Sadzek a guy that could slot into a role like that?
I don't know.
Does Connor Sadzek slide into anything? He's a large man.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's a 6'7", 260-pound human. The problem with Sads is that his best pitch is hittable. Mm. So that's...
That doesn't bode well.
No. So, you know, he's got to get to a point to where he's, you know, and you're going to see some crazy velo. He's going to be so fun. And I think he'll probably be up in September, assuming that he stays healthy.
So his last option this year, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's going to be up in September. And he's pitching right now for the rookies. So
I saw that.
Yeah. He's back to being healthy, and he's just dominating them. I mean, it's,
of course he should.
Yeah. I mean, he throws 100. So, I mean, I'm looking at it now, and he has one walk and you ready for this? He has one walk and 10 Ks in 4 innings.
That's that good.
Four and a third.
Two and a half Ks per inning.
Yeah, that's okay. So he's killing him. But and he should be back soon, and hopefully that's something that clicks. Now here's the deal with Sads is that because he has so much raw ability and because there's so much raw velo there, he might come up to the big leagues and it all clicks. I've seen crazier shit than that before. Like, he may get to the big leagues and it all clicks and he becomes a legit seventh inning guy, maybe for a season. I mean, I think you guys are for sure baseball savvy enough to know that bullpens are, you know, it's a crapshoot every year. It's a crapshoot. And even
you put no faith into those guys.
No, and every person in baseball will tell you the same thing. Like, I don't know if our bullpen's going to be good in March. If you ever hear anybody say our bullpen's going to kick ass, their bullpen will almost certainly suck. And then vice versa. You know, I mean, sometimes guys say, our bullpen looks really sus. Well, look at this year. You know, the Rangers are middle of the pack in reliever statistics, and I don't think anybody really predicted that going, you know, coming out of spring training.
Well, and conversely, I was honestly a bit surprised that we were able to get a true potential starting pitcher for Keela, just because of the variability from season to season from these guys. Because, I mean, just our own track record, if you're a closer on the Rangers, you're undoubtedly, yeah, you're going to bomb, and you're going to get traded or dropped from the roster next year.
Yeah, your next year isn't going to be very good. Your this year is good, but your next year isn't going to be very good. So,
right,
you know, but we'll have to see. And yeah, I'm happy that they were able to get Hearn and whoever else is coming. And there was a pack of Rangers front office guys and scouts there to see Hearn and WayJ that night. And you know, and I was joking with them, said, "You guys be here tomorrow?" And they said, "Absolutely not, man. We got players to be named later to go scout." And they were all catching flights the next day.
Good.
Going to different places, and we'll see what they can bring back and continue to throw some names in the hopper here.
Yeah, well, while they're likely to be hopes and prayers, you know, it's still shiny new toys to take a look at and hope on.
For sure.
We do love the shiny new toys.
Yep. Yes.
Mike talked extensively about opening up all of our prospect Christmas presents come August 1st. So it has been...
Under the trade deadline tree.
Yeah, it's always entertaining to see those guys kind of come into the system. And you know, you never see the warts on the new players you bring it in. So I'm just looking at the list here. I'm like, okay, Taylor Hearn's going to be a 3 with upside. And Wei-Jie Wong is going to easily replace Jake Diekman with his 90 grade changeup, and then Jason Barr is going to like turn into Kyle Cody, but without the Tommy John. We'll figure it out.
Yep, absolutely, so, absolutely. Yep,
those guys are always fun.
It's always
but
fun.
But in the context of like new toys and new things to look at, we mentioned Brett Martin. Yeah, he's one of the guys who's on the 40. There actually aren't a ton of interesting names on the 40 man right now. It's just not really the situation in terms of September call-ups from what I was looking at, of guys who aren't already being talked about within the context of Texas. So it's like Brett's on there. Joe Palumbo has made his recovery and is doing some real fun things. And
he's my favorite.
Johan Hernandez is still a Texas Ranger, sort of.
He's not my favorite. Yep.
He's not anybody's favorite.
I like him as a kid. Like I was kind of surprised by the whole thing in Kansas City. You know, I was pretty surprised when I heard some of those stories and stuff. But, you know, I mean, I think that was also a lot of – it's just a big group, you know. I mean, I think it's public record that they were all out with a bunch of Royals. And, you know, the thing is there's so much crossover with the Royals organization. So,
because of surprise.
Yeah, because of surprise. And then also, the teams play each other a lot in the minor league level.
Oh, of course.
Like tomorrow, or day after tomorrow. Tomorrow night, Frisco is still in playing Little Rock. But then tomorrow, then they go to Northwest Arkansas and play the Royals, double-A team. And they play Wilmington, you know, in the Carolina League. And there's just a lot of crossover there. And then they all spend a month and a half together in the spring, so they, even though they're rivals on the field, they're all also, you know, and then they know each other back home, you know. So that whole pack, that whole night was the pack of Rangers and Royals, Venezuelans, and all went out and maybe just had a little bit too much fun. So
wait, so do you? I'm not asking you to share if you do know, but do you know what actually happened? Like, what?
Not really. No, okay. Not really. And even if I did, I probably wouldn't share it here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, I'm just curious because nobody knows, and I was just wondering if there's, you know.
I've heard the police were not involved.
No, there was no cops. No, my thing was, the way it was explained to me was that it was just sort of embarrassing.
Okay.
That's the quote that I got. Just sort of embarrassing. So, to me, wait, that sounds like...
You really don't have to make fun of the podcast while you're still on it. The Rangers run down.
Just quote, sort of embarrassing.
Just sort of embarrassing.
Whole thing, yeah. Yeah, which that could be, you know, that could be, maybe they got a little loud in the hotel lobby or something like that, you know, but no, I don't think...
Is that enough for him to get sent down all the way to...
Well, I think it was punitive damages is the thing with Johander, and I think that they were public about that.
Yeah.
Is that they said that, listen, this is kind of a trend that they wanted to eliminate. You know, these were some things. There were some things that had gone on in the past that had led them to a point to where his punishment that night was a little bit more severe than some of the other, you know, Venezuelan revelers from that evening. So,
I hope Ruggie sent him a thank you card for taking one for the team.
Now, the interesting thing there was that they did dispatch the Venezuelan attitude whisperer, and I do know that they sent G-Rod. They sent Wilder Rodriguez out to Kinston. Yeah, to work with them to get into Johander's ear.
I'm so glad that he's still in and around the organization.
Yeah, and still very, very important, and still just a remarkable guy. And yeah, so they sent him from Arizona, where he's been working with the rookies, to Kinston. It's like the wolf, you know,
the cleaner.
Oh, you're sending the wolf? Oh, okay, you're sending G-Rod? Yep. We got a Venezuelan kid who's gone a little bit off the reservation here. Oh man, just send in G-Rod. It's fine. He'll get him back up. So, yeah, but I don't worry about attitude with Yo. That's not one of the reasons why he's not one of my favorites. I don't see the stuff that gets big leaguers out. You know, sure. I mean, not three times through. There's a scout that broke my heart, and I may have told this story before, but a scout broke my heart about 3 years ago. He sent me a text and said, "Hey, I just put an up and down grade on your boy Johander." And I was just like, come on, this is a lefty with a plus changeup who at the time was throwing 92 to 95. I'm like, you just put an up and down grade on this guy? And he's like, yeah, I don't see it. Doesn't have, you know, the problem with him is, and I've written this quite a bit, is his fastball, he has a lot of trouble getting glove side. So he can't bring it across his body. So because of that, all the scouting reports are very, very easy to read because he keeps his fastball arm side. So if you're a right-handed hitter and you get up 2-0 and you know he's going to throw a fastball, not only do you know that a fastball is generally coming because that's a fastball count, but when you are an A-ball, double-A, or not even A-ball, double-A, triple-A, and big league hitter, and you not only know what pitch is coming, but you know the general vicinity it's going to finish, that's bad things happen. Yeah. Very bad things happen for the pitcher. And that's what happens in Yo's case. You know, he falls behind 3-1 and a right-handed hitter says, okay, well, I'm looking for a 91 mile an hour fastball in the outer half, and then they swing out of their shoes and
yeah, bad things happen.
Get one of those Bugs Bunny baseballs that's screaming pretty as much, it's leaving the park.
Yeah. Pretty much. So, but you know, it is, they're not all going to be you know, this is why it's so incredibly hard to develop starting pitchers, and when you get one that does come through your system, it's just so rare and such a damn unicorn. I mean, it's, if you get a get good contributions from developed starting pitchers, then you just really have, it's like having a cheat code to how to win and how to compete at the highest level of the big leagues. You know, you're going to be a good team if you can develop your own starting pitching.
Yeah, that seems to be an organization that a direction that the organization has taken in the last like 18 months, really in a new area. So we're seeing sort of a new slowdown approach with pitcher development. I know something that's been talked about a lot is how like walks are down across the organization. We've got a couple of names who've become really interesting as pitching prospects. So as of 9:30. Jonathan Hernandez's day is probably done. He's up at 90-something pitches. 6 innings, 2 hits, 3 walks, 9 strikeouts. Loaded the bases in the 6th inning on like a fielding error in right field and a hit-by-pitch to get 3 guys on, and then he induced a fly out to get out of the inning without giving up any runs. So easily his best start for Frisco. We've had some disappointments in guys like Kyle Cody and Cole Reagans getting hurt this year, but Hans has been, you know, everything and more from what we were promised last year. John Hernandez obviously blew up in high A and maybe is kind of getting it back on track with Frisco. But I know there's a couple of other names that are sort of floating around the system in terms of interesting arms. Hickory seems to have found a couple that are probably pretty worth talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think most notably AJ Alexi and Tyler Phillips. Mm-hmm. And Spies to some extent before he got hurt. But It's Spies he's hurt, right? And Alexi's healthy.
Yeah, yeah, Spies is healthy.
I had this weird thing where I was completely confusing AJ Alexi and Alex Spies in my head. Like, I watched a Hickory game, and I was
You confused AJ Alexi and Alex Spies?
I was watching this game, and I was like, AJ Alexi is a white guy? And like,
yeah, I was like, say, have you ever seen these two kids?
I have very much not, and yeah. Like, oh, these are not the same person at all.
Yeah, AJ is. They're both about 6'4". AJ is in both long and lean, but yeah, AJ is a redhead, and Alex is.
I had
not,
seen yeah. Alex Spies, and so every time I had seen his picture, I've never met the man, but I happened to watch. There was one of the few MILB TV games for Hickory, and I was like, he's a tall, skinny ginger. That's not what I thought. That's not right at all. But he's had a really good year, and Tyler Phillips has had a phenomenal year down there. And so we're seeing a couple of names that are maybe, you know, dreamable pitching guys. I mean, you got anything on them? Or
I'm obviously a huge fan of Tyler Phillips. Anybody that follows me on Twitter will know that I like guys like him, and I think that I've always thought that there was projection there. You know, I've always thought that there was an ability to. You could look at Tyler Phillips and have something to dream on, mostly because he's always had good control, and what he's doing now is he's learning command, so he's putting it where he wants to now. But he does not walk many guys, and there was always enough of the physical presence. He's another one that's kind of shaped like Hearn in that he's 6'5", and his shoulders go straight across, big broad shouldered guy. He's bigger than Hearn. He's probably 225 now. But still just a baby. I mean, he's just a few months older than Colt Reagans. And Reagans is not going to pitch in A ball until 2019, you know, midway through 2019. And for all we know at that point, Tyler Phillips may be in Double A. So, you know, yeah, I'm a big fan of Phillips. I think that there's a great deal of there's still some projection there. He's got a really good curveball. He's got a really good changeup. He throws a kind of a unique pitch. He has a two-seamer, so his fastball is normally like 91 to 94. But again, he's another one of those huge guys who can reach back and get a 5 or a 6 anytime he needs to. But he throws a two-seamer that's like 88, 86, 87. Really? Yeah, it's really strange. As a matter of fact, I was standing watching him in surprise, and I thought that it's hard to differentiate that his two-seamer between the two-seamer and the changeup, except you see the changeup moves more. The changeup has more fade. And the two-seamer is a sinker. But it's kind of an odd velo discrepancy there. And I was standing there with a fellow named Adam Groff, who is Tyler's agent. And he was insistent. He's like, no, Michael, that's his two-seamer. That's the two-seamer. Because we're standing behind the guys with the radar guns. And it's, you know, 86 miles an hour. And he says, yeah, that's the two-seamer. I said, so his four-seamer is, you know, that day he was 93 to 96. And Tyler's, yeah, he's really exciting. I really like that kid. And in best case scenario for him, you're talking about an absolute hoss, innings eating, knife and fork style, number four, number five starter who can get 200 innings. I mean, that's, you know what he kind of reminds me of physically and then stuff wise, kind of like Jared Eichhoff.
Okay.
Except okay. Phillips has a better changeup than a breaking ball. Eichhoff was the opposite. He had a better breaking ball. He had a really good curveball. And then the changeup has come along later. But another guy who's just sort of big-bodied guys that they're not stars, but best-case scenario, you could see him turning into somebody who could, you know, if he stays healthy, and if Eichhoff were healthy, you'd be talking about a guy who gets 33 starts and throws 200 innings, you know, 220 innings. So that's Tyler Phillips' ceiling, which is very exciting. Alexi is about the same age, but quite a bit further behind in terms of hit as a project. Better fastball. He's, even though, you know, the velo is still around the same, AJ's fastball is a ton of life, and he'll get swings and misses with it. And then he throws a really good curveball. It's just slow. The only concern I have about the curveball is it kind of gets a little bit loopy at times. And everybody knows if you leave a curveball up, bad things happen. You know, and his curveball is legit slow. I mean, the day I saw it in surprise, it was 75 to 77. And he was 91 to 95 with the fastball. And his biggest thing is just walks. he's the anti Tyler Phillips in terms of control and command. Like he has always had problems repeating his delivery. He's always had problems with his strike foot. He's always had problems with his release point. But I give the Rangers development team a heck of a lot of credit. I mean, you know, these guys are a lot of these guys who had very visible flaws early in the season or even last season have bought into the system, and the system is working. So I give the Rangers new fangled and reworked pitching development plan a lot of credit for some of the growth that we've seen behind guys like Tyler Phillips, guys like AJ Alexie, who are getting better. I mean, sure, it's frustrating that we haven't gotten a chance to get Kyle Cody and Alex Spies and Cole Reagans and some of these other guys out there, but the guys that have been there, generally speaking, have taken a step forward. So it's been a good year in that regard.
Now, when you talk about the, you know, changing in the player development and on the pitching side in particular, one thing that I read a lot about last year was that they were doing a thing where they wouldn't let the pitchers throw breaking balls until like the second half of the season. Is that continued this year, or did they just kind of scrap that and everything is new?
Yeah, no, that definitely continues, but that's also not unique to the Rangers. That was just one of those things that became public and around the time that everybody was talking about the new pitching development programs and all that kind of stuff. But that's not unique at all. That's very common in pitching development, is to kind of shelve a pitch is the term that is often used. They'll say, hey, we're going to shelve your changeup for the first two innings. I know guys who've gotten a pitch shelved for an entire year. You know, and it's not just with the Rangers organization. That happens quite a bit. One of the interesting things that the Rangers really focused on last year, that they're probably still focusing on it this year, but I just haven't seen or heard as much about it. So maybe they've kind of eased off on it a little bit, was fastball command.
Right.
It was it felt like everywhere that I went in 2017, everybody within the Rangers organization that I spoke to, every scout or coach or you know, front office guy was all talking about fastball to command, fastball command, fastball command. So I haven't heard that as much in 2018. I don't know if it's, I would assume it's still probably a priority. It tends to be something that's pretty important with, with guys, and especially guys who don't throw particularly hard.
Right.
But I just haven't heard as much about it. That was a more unique thing to me last year, to hear so much emphasis being put on fastball command, as opposed to, hey, you can't throw this pitch. I mean, I've seen guys even at the double-A level just throw nothing but fastballs for three innings, or nothing but, you know, alternating fastball, changeup, fastball. I saw Tyler Phillips have a start like that in Surprise, where he was fastball, changeup, fastball, changeup, fastball, changeup for three innings. So
it's pretty fun.
Yeah, pretty much everybody knew what they were getting. And the best part was they still didn't crush him. So,
funny.
Yeah, but yeah, that kind of stuff isn't uncommon at all. But I think that, to get kind of circle back to the original point, is that guys like Tyler Phillips and AJ Alexie are having good seasons, and they're definitely moving forward and looking more dude like, as the saying goes.
Uh-huh. All right, Mike, you got a question or a new area to bring us into here?
Well, we had talked about asking Michael what his projected ETA was on some of these guys. So just kind of picking your brain.
Yeah, no, shoot, fire away.
So just the two guys you just spoke of right now, where do you see AJ and Tyler? What's their ETA?
Oh, I think that'll be a while. Those are the type of pitchers that almost certainly need a year at each level, certainly in Alexi's case. Like I said, I think he's even though he gets more Ks, I think that he's going to be a little bit behind Tyler. So I would say 2019 will probably be high A for both of those guys. Okay. 2020 could be double A, and then 2021 double A, triple A, and maybe the big leagues. Kind of just depends. The good news is they would both be 23. In 2021, so
yeah, if you awesome.
You know, if you had a 23-year-old starting pitcher, it feels like a big, huge win.
Oh yeah.
But I also think that the Rangers are part of this, and they've talked about it, and I'm sure you guys have, and everybody else has talked about how they feel as though in the past they rushed guys and they weren't fully developed when they got there, and they weren't fully, they were capable of handling. Okay, look at Chi-Chi. Chi-Chi pitched really well, and then when he didn't pitch well, he wasn't 100% capable of handling the adversity that comes with being a major league pitcher, you know, right. Where you have to face guys like tonight. Like, this is why I'm a little bit concerned about after nights like tonight when you see Ariel. I mean, that's a guy who hasn't really pitched in AAA. And then, you know, so
you're asking a lot, sending him into the Bronx and saying, this is Giancarlo Stanton. You may have seen him on television.
Yeah, this is Giancarlo.
Just throw the pitches. What's the worst he could do? Oh, wow, okay, you set a record. Good job.
Right, this is Giancarlo. He does that.
I'm sure he's going to sleep like a baby tonight.
Yeah, although, you know what? If there's anybody who's mentally capable of handling that kind of stuff, it's that dude. I mean, that dude
interesting.
He's. I think I've said 15 words to the guy in all the years he's been in Frisco, and he is a quiet, ice in his veins type. You know, he's like that's why they call him Bartolito. He's like,
oh, nice.
He's like Cologne. He just doesn't say much. He doesn't. He's not not necessarily. He's definitely not a rah rah guy. He's not a first to the ballpark, last one to leave type dude. That's not Ariel, you know. That's not the way that he is. But he gets his work in and then leaves. So
I know Mike is excited to hear that because it means he can start his countdown to Ariel Jurado wins to be the winningest Latin-born pitcher in Major League history.
Yeah, you can.
That was a running gag for us. We Cologne was going through these records, and you know, with his next start, he's going to tie Juan Marichal, or he's going to beat Juan Marichal, or now it's going to be tying for most wins by a Latin-born. It's just been...
Well, and at this point, I mean, Ariel's got this thing in the bag by about 2050.
Yeah. Yeah, he has to pitch till he's 46 as well, we're all good.
Well, someone's going to need to carry that torch because I'm going to be dead by
that's
then.
Okay.
We will keep your preserved head in a jar to Futurama style us through the Rangers rundown.
That's we're going to Ted Williams your head. Just put it over there.
All right, so frozen. Some other names. How about Joe Palumbo? What's his ETA?
Much closer.
Tasty.
Yeah.
Much closer. He is my favorite, and he is really good. So here's a wild-ass prediction, because we're on a podcast, and I can say anything I want to.
Yes, sir. There are no rules.
If they go to spring training next year, and because that rotation is so bleak,
yes.
If Joe Palumbo ended up either being the fifth or being one of the first guys up,
yes.
When one of those guys goes down, it wouldn't surprise me one bit.
Yes,
he's that good. Like he's that good, and they're that bad. If that,
I'll cut that second line.
Yeah. Well, you can.
No, we can leave that all in there.
Any Rangers fan who's made it this long in this podcast understands that this team is not good. So, and they're not going to be good next year. So,
2019, Carlos Tochi, like, he's going to carry us to the promised land.
Carlos Tochi can't actually lift things up, so he's not going to carry anyone anywhere. I have seen Carlos Tochi in his underwear, and he looks like an underwear model, which if you can flip open the pages of GQ, you will realize that that is not what professional baseball players look like. So
no, they look more like Willie Calhoun.
Yes, yeah. They look like, yes. I have never seen Miguel Cabrera in his underwear, but that is what ball
players
look
like. We've all imagined it.
Who hasn't?
Stayed up many a night.
Yes, who hasn't thought about that guy in his sliding shorts?
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
Yeah, yes.
Enjoying. Wow.
Enjoying all that Detroit
Mike
has
to a brave new world here tonight.
yeah. Well, I mean, Joe is well, here's the deal with Joe is he just has better shit than everybody else.
And he's got an 80 grade name.
Yes, he's got a
Joe
ton of tattoos.
Palumbo.
Hey, listen, he's got a little bit of Long Island. I don't know if you guys.
Does
he
really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. He's got a Long Island. Speak. Yeah, Long Island. Yeah, man, for sure.
Long Island.
Yeah, for sure. If you listen carefully, you hear it just a little bit, you know. But arm full of tattoos, you know, which oddly is the right arm. Doesn't let the golden arm be touched. But he's 92 to 95 with a fastball. He's got a swing and miss changeup, and his curveball is his best pitch.
Sweet.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been wishing on this guy for a long time. I was crushed when he went down with TJS.
Yeah, I was too. So because So I saw him in spring training in 2017, and the first inning, speaking of pitching and just what they're working on and different times, the first two innings, he just threw fastballs and changeup, and he was mowing down hitters. And I was standing, I don't think that he would mind me telling this story, but I was standing with Mike Daly, who's the AGM, and I said, Mike, this kid's unbelievable. I'm loving every minute of this, because he was 92 to 95, touching 96, and he was just, the changeup was unhittable. And Mike looked at me and said, you seen the Yakker yet? I said, no. He said, it's his best pitch. I said, it's better than these two. And he said, yep. And I'm not kidding, right on cue, he throws a curveball. And the hitter missed it by 3.5 feet. I mean, it's deep. It's not as hard. I mean, it's harder than like AJ Alexi's, and it's deeper. It's got great depth, and it dives down. He can throw it for a pit. He can throw it for a strike. He can throw it for a swing and miss.
Just makes batters look stupid.
Well, yeah. If it wouldn't surprise me, and of course now that I'm saying this, he's going to completely wet the bed. But it wouldn't surprise me if next spring he opens a lot of eyes. And by opens a lot of eyes, I mean Gallo, Mazzara, Elvis, Rugi, because he's going to be pitching for them for at least the first half of spring training, because he's on the 40-man and he's going to be getting starts. And I think that these guys are all going to say, and I think there's going to be people are going to start writing articles saying, this kid's really good, you know, and I'm not sure what the plan is for him for the rest of the year. I think that there's a few guys who may be really good candidates for the Arizona Fall League. He's certainly one of them. He's tops on that list.
Yeah.
To get some, get some innings in. That's assuming that they don't put him up in the big league bullpen, you know, for some of his last few games. Just to get him up there. I don't think that's going to happen, but I've seen crazier things happen than to have a kid like Joe end up as a September call up since he's on the 40 man and it's easy to do, but I think he could get some Arizona Fall League starts. I think, speaking of the aforementioned Chi-Chi, I think Chi-Chi's going to get some Arizona Fall League starts and maybe Wes Benjamin, some of those guys. But anyways...
See, you stole my thunder, because I was going to try to throw a curveball in here and say, is Wes Benjamin a big league player? I've loved him since he was drafted.
He's great.
I don't know why I like Wes Benjamin so much.
Probably because you may have met him. Have you met him?
I have not met Wes Benjamin.
Oh, if you met him, you'd fall in love with the kid. He's amazing. I just talked to him the other day for a long time at the ballpark, and he's awesome. He might be one of the sharpest kids in the Rangers farm system. There's always a few of them in Frisco that are guys who are genuinely affable and have great personalities, but then are also really, really bright. And at the top of that list this year for sure is Wes Benjamin and Tyler Davis. I mean, both very engaging, very, very bright, very articulate, very well-read, you know, savvy cats, you know, and he's, Wes is up there. As far as dude status, I don't really know. I mean, he's one of those guys that, because he's left-handed, because he throws four pitches, because he's crafty, you know, I mean, the unfortunate part is he actually pitches for the Rangers. Yeah, usually those are the guys who eat up the Rangers, you know, a lefty who throws 91 and then throws three other pitches and just keeps him off balance. So basically,
you're
saying
we should donate him to Oakland.
Yeah, he needs to be traded to the A's. Is basically the way that it goes. But I'm rooting for him because he's awesome. But I mean, you contrast the stuff that Wes Benjamin has versus someone like Joe Palumbo, and it's night and day. I mean, it really is just night and day. And if Joe continues on the path that he's been on and continues to improve and stays healthy and the arm continues to recover and get strong and he does all of his off-season stuff, I think that 2019 could be a very interesting year for Joe Palumbo, and I think that the local media is going to need to get on the Joe Palumbo circus here pretty quick.
Well, we're pulling for him.
Yeah.
So there's a couple other guys, and we've already talked about these guys, so I just want to kind of...
Lightning around us.
Okay.
Yeah, just because there's a point I want to make. So... what are your thoughts on the ETA of Taylor Hearn?
Oh, next year.
Nice. Really?
Yeah, late September of 2019.
Okay.
I think he gets some starts because he'll go on the 40 this year.
Right.
And then I don't expect them to be in contention next year. I mean, it's based...
yeah.
It's baseball, so I mean,
it's a pretty safe assumption.
It's whatever, but I mean, as far as I know, the Astros will still have Carlos Correa, Jose Altuve, Garrett Cole, and Justin Verlander. So.
Yeah, but the Rangers are going to have Corbin, Machado, and Harper, right?
This is true. Yeah, they're going to sign them all. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe use that Texas Live money.
Yeah. Exactly. That's right. They're going to sell that many tacos at Guy Fieri's place that they're going to be awash in capital. But yeah, I think Taylor could be. I mean, realistically, if he continue, because he's pitched this whole year at Double A, I think next year he'll probably open the season at Round Rock, or no, I'm sorry, at San Antonio, at Fresno,
right,
at Nashville,
at Vegas.
Oh man, if they move to Nashville, I'd be so happy.
Yeah,
because it's like within a driving range from it.
It's possible. And then it's possible. They're one of the just
probably move.
There's really only two or three real options, and that's one of them. But I think Taylor could be in AAA, you know, for maybe the whole season next year. He's done really well in Double A this year, which is a shame for me because I think I'm running out of Taylor Hearn starts. But he could be in AAA
tomorrow.
Next year. Yeah, he starts tomorrow in Northwest Arkansas, and then
Mike, go for the podcast.
And the very last one would be Hans Kraus. What's his ETA? He's already jumped two levels this year, so is he going to hit? He's going to be a dude at the beginning of next season and round out the year at Frisco.
No,
and
he'll
be in Arlington to start 2020.
Yeah, that's way too ambitious. Yeah, no, I think that he'll be in Hickory.
A man can dream.
Yeah, I think that this what they've done in the last week, and frankly, it surprised me. I thought he was going to be in Spokane for the year and then go to Instructs. So I think that this may be the template that they're going to work Hans with. So that means he'd start next year in Hickory, and then if he pitches well and continues to dominate and stays healthy and gets his innings in. I mean, that's the big thing that if I had anything, you know, any kind of wisdom or whatever to impart to people that watch the minor leagues, pay attention as much as anything else on the results-wise as far as stats, pay attention to innings pitched because the clubs do. That's the thing is they're trying to build you up. So, like, when I'm talking to a young pitcher, I like Wes Benjamin the other day. He knows exactly how many innings he pitched last year. He knows exactly what the goal was for this year. So innings pitched is a big, big metric that not a lot of people on the outside pay a lot of attention to, but on the inside it's constantly monitored. Because what they're trying to do is you got to build up to 200 a year. You know, that's really, really hard. So most of these guys will get 89 to 90 in A-ball. And then by the time between A-ball and the big leagues, you got to stretch your arm out to where you can pitch 200 if you're going to be a starter. So assuming that Hans just kind of continues on the template that they've set for him this year, I would guess that 2019 is Hickory and then maybe the last month in Down East. And then a similar thing. 2020 would be Down East and then the last month in Frisco. And then 2021 is anybody's guess, probably jump between Frisco and Round Rock, and maybe if he's really doing special things, then...
You're saying we're trading Hans Kraus?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Dang, I keep on saying Round Rock. This is going to be so hard. like when they weren't Myrtle Beach, and then they were High Desert.
The Myrtle Beach thing has so screwed me up. Myrtle Beach's like hats were so good.
Oh, Myrtle! Everything about Myrtle Beach is
great. Myrtle Beach is great.
Yeah, they went from the best to the worst. So, yeah, I don't know where it's going to be, but I think that Hans could be he's a 2021 type kid.
Okay, so that kind of gets me to my point, and this is something I don't want to belabor this too much. I mean, we could have an entire podcast.
That's unfortunate that you invited me, because I will belabor the hell out of any topic.
I've got all night.
Yeah.
So that's what makes me scratch my head when it comes to the rebuild, is that from what you're telling me, all of our position players, they've all arrived, and now they're going to be waiting, you know, 2, 3, maybe 4 years before these pitchers are going to be catching up and making it to the big leagues. You've got this disparity where all your star position players could potentially be 3 to 4 years older, or at least in terms of major league experience, as these pitchers. How does that meld when you're trying to put together a World Series contender when you've got that gap, because you don't really see that too often?
They're going to bridge the gap by spending a crap ton of dough. That's my prediction.
That's what I'm going to and they're probably going to end up trading away some of those assets that are farther out. I think there is a good chance that Hans Kraus could be traded.
No, don't. I know. Don't say it. Don't say it. Okay, Mike. I quit. This podcast sucks.
I'm not too.
It's pretty bad. All right, good night, everybody.
I'm out. Well, first of all, I really genuinely don't think that they would trade someone like Hans. He's the best raw pitching prospect they've had in probably 15 years. But to your point, I totally see what you're saying. And this is why I continue to predict that I think this year they're going to do, and this sucks to tell Rangers fans, I think next year is going to be more of this year. I think they're going to go to the winter and they're going to look for Doug Fisters, Bartolo Colons, Matt Morris.
They're not going for Patrick Corbin.
No, I don't think so.
Or however,
but here's the good news. Yeah. I do think they're going to show up to those 2019 winter meetings before the 2020 season, and I think they're going to spend cash. I think that, and it wouldn't surprise me also if they look for some good young starting pitching in return for they have a surplus of one thing. They have left-handed power bats, corner outfield, first base, DH type guys. And they can move some of them. They can absolutely move some of them, and they're good. You know, these are not terrible players. These are big league regulars. You know, Nomar Mazar is a big league regular who is probably going to amount to a 2 to 4 win player. You know, he could be maybe even more if he switches over to first base or something like that, you know. Calhoun,
I'm
Gallo.
Sorry, are you going out on the limb here and saying Nomar Mazar is fine? It's a risky take.
Yeah. I mean, he's an average big leaguer, you know, or yeah, above average big leaguer. Yeah, this is the limb I'm walking out on. So, and I feel confident on it. I'm doing so without a safety net. But yeah, mm-hmm. I really do think that. And by the way, that's not just my opinion. Well, it is my
that's
opinion, but
yeah, it's that's no, been
I do
the
think
case
that
thus far.
Yeah, I do think that I've heard not think that I've heard, but I know another front office guy from another team that I know very well. That says the Rangers are laying in the shrubs right now until, and they're going to come out and they're going to spend a ton of money. And when you start to think about it, it really does sort of make sense. They have a tremendous amount of money coming off of the books mm-hmm. with some of these guys like Chu and obviously things like the Fielder contract will be done and Beltre and trading Hamels and little things like that. Now they are going to have to figure out what they're going to do with Elvis. I am on Team Elvis in terms of I think that he's ready to take the keys to the clubhouse and you know run the ship for the next few years with all these young guys. But if you think about it, they're going to have plenty of money to spend. Also, they are going to be looking at least 2, probably 3 years of consecutive attendance decline, pretty mm-hmm. substantial attendance decline. These last few years of the ballpark, and so I really think that they feel like, from an ownership perspective, that they're going to want to make a splash for the 2020 season, and they don't want to. I mean, this is going to break Rangers fans' heart, but they really don't want to open that new stadium with Martin Perez on the mound on opening day.
How dare you, sir?
Yeah. So
none of us want to see that. None of us.
Or Matt Carlos Moore. Tochi is going to pitch.
Yes,
the
Tochi's going to pitch and throw 90.
He and Ryan Rua are going to tandem start.
Yes.
Game.
Yeah. Well, Rua has a cannon. He could.
Yeah. He can actually throw.
Yeah. Game that he pitched, he threw 92 or 93, didn't he?
Yeah. He did.
And then he got was a changeup. He got the strikeout on, right. He just like looped some crap changeup in there with no arm speed whatsoever, and
that's
it worked. It was really fun.
That's awesome. So
can I ask like a kind of mean, but I think also sort of relevant question?
Fire away.
Okay, so it's a two-parter.
Okay. Are both parts mean?
No, neither. I'm going to force you to pick your favorite child in one of them. And then, so it's, Texas has 3 interesting center field prospects. Well, they have multiple, but 3 particularly interesting center field prospects right now between Lenny Taveras, JP Martinez, and Bubba Thompson. Mm-hmm. So if you had to pick just one to make it, which one is it? And then, if you had to put your whole reputation on which one you think ends up with the best career, which one is that?
I still take Taveras on both accounts.
Okay.
And here's the issue. Now, this year, certainly when you look at it statistically, it's not all that great. Mm-hmm. But here's the reason I take Taveras is because having seen him in person. I have seen this kid take dozens and dozens of rounds of BP. And there is more power than what he has shown in the games. I don't know how they get it to show up in the game, but I have seen the kid hit the snot out of baseballs. It just hasn't come about in games. I don't know if that's because of approach. I don't know if that's because, you know, he changes up some of the things physically about him in the games. I don't get a chance to see him play in a lot of the games outside of spring training, but I have seen him take BP, and from both sides, the left side he has more power, but I've seen him take BP, and from both sides he has more power than what he's shown. And center field is naturally gifted. He can throw, he can run, he's a good base stealer. And, you know, here's the thing with Leody is that I actually call him the little chill, because he's got the same moxie that I saw on Mazzara when he was 17, 18. It's the same swagger. It's not cocky, it's not in your face, but it's very confident, and it's quiet, and it's soft-spoken, and, you know, he's not a brash guy. I just think that his tools are so good that, and here's the other thing too, is the unfortunate part is I don't necessarily think we're looking at a star. I really don't. I think that he's an everyday center fielder. I don't think that this isn't Acuna. You know, this isn't a star. This isn't Juan Soto. He's older than all those guys or about the same way.
So weird.
You know, isn't that weird to think about? I mean, those guys are, they're not just in the big leagues. They're raking in the big leagues, and they're Leody Taveras' age.
It's crazy.
Yeah. But
Juan Soto is an insanely talented person.
I don't understand what's going on with this kid. Like,
did you see his ejection the other night?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then that's, I saw so his gross comment about it where he just told him that he just told the ump that he thinks that he should be better.
Yeah. Hey, by the way,
I just want to make you better.
And Soto was right, so, you know, like,
yeah, I just want to make you better. So, but yeah, I still take Leody. However, that said, I do think people are oddly sleeping on Bubba Thompson. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea why. I mean, maybe it's because he's a little bit older. You know, like, he turned 20 last month.
He was slightly old for his graduating class.
Yeah.
But,
But I've seen him. He hit a bomb in the game in Arizona when we saw him. And he can flat out fly. He's one of these center fielders. It's kind of like Tochi. It's these guys, God, even though we goof on them, you know. But
oh, no.
When I see Tochi play center field, he never looks like he's running very fast, but he's there every time.
Well, that's because he's not very fast.
Yeah, that's the odd part about him. You know, is that he's not that fast.
We've never goofed on Tochi, have we?
Slow. Like,
okay, here's a good thing about Bubba.
This is the internet's number one Carlos Tochi appreciation podcast.
The only, one and only.
He is our punching bag every single week.
Yes, first and last.
Yes, he is the valedictorian of summer school, this Carlos Tochi. But I saw Bubba play, and when I saw Bubba playing center field, he went after a ball in the gap that was, and he was running in. So, and we were standing right on the fence, you know, and he was running in, and it was in the gap behind the shortstop. So it was kind of that you know, the Bermuda Triangle area where the left fielder, the shortstop, and the center fielder are all converging. He comes running in, makes a bucket catch, and never breaks stride. And I kid you not, the thing, and I was standing with Scott Lucas and a couple other scouts, and I looked at the scouts, I said, he was just running. He just went into a full sprint with his mouth closed. And they all said, he did, didn't he? They said, he was in a full sprint looking at the ball, and his head was staying still, like his head wasn't bobbling around like every other human does whenever they're running as fast as they can. And he had his mouth closed, which sounds like a little thing, but then you think, like, damn, you are fast. And you are a hell of an athlete when you run at full speed with your mouth closed, like it's no big deal. Like, you're not panting, you're not... And he just kind of scooped under the ball and caught it and drew a little bit of oohs and ahs from some of the coaches, you know, and then he just sort of flipped the ball into the third baseman, and everyone was just like, he covered a tremendous amount of ground.
I think his athleticism is something that kind of gets bizarrely understated, and that you have lots of players who are like two-sport guys who are quote-unquote athletes, and so we're like, oh, well, he's an athlete, but I'm an Alabama guy. I do follow Alabama high school football to some extent, and I remember Bubba Thompson. He went to McGill-Tulane High School. McGill-Tulane is a powerhouse school here in the state. You know, when they're playing and things. And Bubba Thompson popped as a high school football player. Like, you could watch him on the field and go, wow.
And he was always a quarterback, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was absolutely a quarterback. I mean, he could throw, but he was a running guy. And it's like, I just don't really get it. I think, you know, like you said, the age is a weird one in that I think players get dinged for their age a lot when it's not his fault that he happens to be old for his class. You know,
yeah, and the thing is, too, is that he's still probably league average at 20. He's still probably league average for that, you know, for the Sally.
Yeah, for being an A-ball? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like he's, I don't know, I think people are oddly sleeping on him. And then JPM still is a little bit of a mystery. I mean, I spoke with a scout who had Spokane, and I spoke with him yesterday, and I said, what are you putting on JPM? He said, I'm putting incomplete. Like, I need to see this kid again. Like, I don't think that he's got his legs totally under him. I mean, as odd as
JPM
that sounds.
And Dizzy Arias are some really interesting and kind of enigmatic dudes coming off of Cuba that we just, you know, there's parts to really love and there's parts to be afraid of, but you can't trust either one because we really just don't know very much about
these guys. Yeah, I think these are going to be 2019 guys. You know, these are going to be guys that we go and we look at in 2019 and try and get a really good read on them and try and find out, you know, as much as we can about them. And then also just try and find out, get daily scouting reports on them, get some guys with some more eyes on them. I don't know what's going to happen to them.
Very much unlike Curtis Terry, who we know everything about because he's
awesome. He's one of my favorite kids. What a sweet kid. He's another one that is so polite off the field and then just gets on the field and he's not polite to baseballs at all. He hit the
one the Northwest League Home Run Derby, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, unsurprisingly. And
what was that, 14 home runs in 2 minutes?
Yeah, 14 in 2 minutes.
Crazy.
It's no big deal for that kid. And he knows the situation. He's well aware of it. And I have a chance to talk with him in the spring. And, you know, he understands the situation. And for him, I think he's fine with it because these guys, as much as they want to advance and all that kind of stuff, nothing is worse to a minor leaguer than sitting on the bench. That's what you don't want to be. They don't care. They care less about where they're playing than the fact that they are playing. So I think that Curtis understands the situation. Like, look, I could go to Hickory right now, and I'm going to be behind Pozo, and as far as the DH position goes, you're going to be the DH spots are all going to Reed and those guys, you know, Huff, and so he wouldn't get the daily reps. And I think that there's a lot that can be said for putting him he's in the lineup for Spokane every day, and he's facing, you know, oddly enough, that league actually has a slightly higher average age because they get so many of the college kids. So he's facing, you know, good talent up there, and he's just mashing them. So I don't know what they're going to do with those kids going forward because there does look like they have a surplus of large first base DH humans, but you know, they gotta get reps. They gotta play every day. So if it means that he's gotta play in the same league he's been in for three seasons, then that's the case. And he's doing exactly what you would hope a guy in that situation would, which is making it look incredibly easy and making him look stupid for putting him there.
And I think it's gonna be something that's gonna be tiresome but fun in a good way in figuring out like where Texas is gonna stick all these guys on rosters in the next couple of years. I mean, we could go on for a billion years talking about Texas's minor league catching situation. We've got all these guys stacked up on top of each other. And, you know, Arizona has seen David Garcia, you know, big name out of the J2 class a couple years back. Switch hitter, right? Mm-hmm. Garcia's a switch hitter.
Yep.
And then Maximal Morales, who I had not heard of before this year, but love because his first name is a phenomenal first name. It's a great name. Maxwells are excellent people and should be treasured. and he's having a very, very good season. But you've got Isaias Quiroz at Spokane, I believe, and then like Sam Huff, Yoel Pozo, Matt Watley, who have all had, you know, different tastes of being big prospects. And Alex Kowalczyk might be kind of interesting, and Melvin Novoa is still around. And you've got, obviously, Trevino, Carlos Garay, maybe Josh Morgan. Yeah, there's a lot of guys. We're looking at, you know, Tyreek Reed and Curtis Terrios as discussed, and there's a lot of players lying around, and it's actually, in some ways, it's nice that Texas might not have enough positions in the low minors to field all the guys who are good enough to deserve promotions. That's like a cool thing to try and have to balance.
Sure.
It'll be fun to watch, and I'm just really hoping that we get more of these guys into stadiums where my MILB TV actually matters, and I get to watch terrible, terrible, like, high school quality film of Jonathan Hernandez shutting out the Arkansas Travelers, because it's been fun. I got to watch a Hans Kraus start with his insane shimmies and Johnny Cueto weirdness, and it was really, really exciting. And I hope we get to see more of those games going forward.
Me too. Me too. MILB.TV is it's an incredible investment. I understand. Anybody understands, obviously, the financial commitment that clubs have to make to it. I would also not anticipate teams that are affiliates that are owned by their parent club wanting to get a whole lot of information out there. So I would not hold our breath for Hickory or Kinston to be adding MILB.TV anytime soon. They are not trying to grow the brand and make return on their investment. They are trying to.
But hey, John Blake, I know you're listening. I will go and broadcast Kinston games very poorly, and I will do it for very little money next year. So I will give the fans just video on this stuff. It'll be crappy video.
That's exactly what they're. It's exactly what they want, is for bloggers like us to have more ammunition to be critical of the players and to discuss everybody there. Yeah, that's exactly.
This is only love here. Yeah, this is a love only podcast.
They love us. They're huge fans of ours. So yeah. Let me tell you.
Well, I think it's probably about time to look at final questions. See what folks want to try and get off of their minds. See if we can get it off of your chest. We've definitely appreciated the conversation so far. So. I guess we'll pop over to Hayden real quick. If you've got anything for us on the way out.
I have a question that's on the front of my mind. I'm trying to think if it's kind of a... it's not a very insightful question. Okay, so this guy started out the year in Frisco, which is your... you see those guys a lot. Jeffrey Springs.
Mm-hmm.
How good is he?
I don't know.
Like, I mean... He's supposed to strike out all these guys, and I'm super excited about that because we've never had those guys.
No.
And it's like, well, but he also walks the world sometimes.
Jeffrey Springs is going to be one of these guys that he's going to have to prove it at the big league level. That's why I say I don't know how good he is, because Jeffrey Springs is incredibly good when it's 6-1 and he comes in with a 5-run lead in the 7th inning, he's going to K the side. He's going to K the side, and it's going to be filthy. You're going to see a plus changeup, and you're going to see a 92 to 94 mile an hour fastball that he can put in all four quadrants. Right. The thing I do like about Jeffrey, is in addition to the changeup, is that he will raise the eye level a lot. He's not afraid to do that. He'll go letter high 3 times, and then he'll come in, in at the knees, and that's how he gets a lot of his Ks. But he's tricky, because in high leverage situations he has struggled at times, so I don't really know. I mean, I think, how good is he? I think he's a MLB middle reliever, which I've always thought that he was a dude, and I think that he may be a potential long man. He may be another one of these guys who may be able to go 3 innings that we were talking about, a guy who can go one time through the order, but I don't necessarily know that he's a guy who's going to be in leverage situations, but that remains to be seen at the big league level, because there have been guys who have had trouble with that in the minors who then, for whatever reason, excel at the big leagues. I can tell you right now, Keone Kella wasn't all that great in high leverage situations for a long time in the minor leagues, and quite frankly, for a while in the big leagues. And then he sort of grew into that role and adapted to being able to do that. So I think that's kind of the road that they're going to take with Jeffrey Springs. I can tell you this, the club loves him. They love him. His metrics are good. All of the analytics are really strong with him.
Yeah.
And the club loves him, as evidenced by he got invited to big league spring training before he was on the 40 man, which is pretty interesting. The club loves him. So we'll just see.
Well, I love him too.
He is your boy.
I'm a very uneducated. That's actually a good way to put it. I'm very uneducated, but in this regard.
Well, you went to Baylor, so
yeah. Just scouting the stat line and just see all those strikeouts, and I'm like, is this a typo? Is this real? Okay, well, he's like 25 or 26. Okay, well, whatever. Then he gets called up, and I made sure that I watched his outing because I was like, well. He strikes out a lot of people, and this would be new. This would be fun. And then he did really well, and now I'm like just head over here.
Listeners, we cannot stress how excited Hayden was in our group message about Jeffrey Springs debuting and then being good. It was
palpable. Sensual.
I am several hundred miles away and I could feel it. He was very into this.
So that it elicited a tweet from Emily Jones.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that was weird. Yeah, so...
That was a little odd.
No, yeah, it was weird. Just like a 30-second side story. As I tweeted, because I saw that
settling
he was
coming
into
bed in your robe with your wine.
Yeah, so I saw that he was coming in. I was like, oh, crap, I really got to take this shower real quick, though. So I took a shower, paused the game, took a shower, poured a glass of red wine, and, like, got into bed and just, like, hit resume and watched his outing. And so I tweeted about it, you know, that's something that I did. And Emily Jones, of all people, who certainly does not follow me, just tweeted out, like, replied to that tweet and said, you're a good friend. And I was like, I'm not friends with any big leaguers, but thanks for searching Jeffrey Springs and finding the only tweet on the internet about it tonight.
Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah, so Jeffrey Springs is my friend. So maybe I'll put that on the shirt. Fights.
Cool.
Sell that on. We'll make a website and we'll sell it. Jeffrey Springs is my friend.
There you go,
Mike. You got a lead out.
Yeah, I got a question. So Hernandez and Arredondo, those are two guys that seem to be kind of matching each other, kind of going toe-to-toes in terms of their progressing during the year 2018. Which one do you think takes the biggest step forward in 2019?
Great question.
Hernandez. Yeah.
Hands down.
Yeah, Hernandez has much better stuff. Yeah, he has two big league caliber pitches. He has a big league fastball and a big league slider. Arredondo is a crafty guy. He's good. I'll be curious to see what happens with him with regards to the 40-man. Edgar is good, but at this point, Hernandez is floor is a big league reliever, and his ceiling is a big league starter. So if we get more of what we saw tonight, he's a big league starter. If we get more of what we've seen so far with Frisco, he's a big league reliever. So he's really really good. Jonathan Hernandez is a dude of high order for me.
Awesome.
Awesome.
And I've got one little one guy I've followed since his draft. Love my Deep South players. I like my oversized relievers. And this guy is DeMarcus Evans, actually. Pedal, Mississippi. He was a surprising sign from what I gather. Folks were expecting him to go the JUCO route coming out of high school. But he signed with Texas and is having a really fantastic season as a reliever with Hickory. Is DeMarcus Evans a dude?
Yes, he is. He's a dude because he gets tremendous spin rate. His fastball really jumps on guys. And he's a dude now because he stopped walking guys. He started throwing strikes more consistently. That's always been the issue with him. He's a colossus of a man, like 6'5", like 250. He's a huge kid. And he gets a good, you know, high three-quarter release. And he's got great extension. So he's got this real good downhill plane, and then it's spinning like crazy. So it's one of these things that he generally is around like 93 to 96, 92 to 95, but the spin rate adds a little bit of velocity to it, if you will. Not real velocity, but perceived velocity. He is a dude, and I'm very, very happy. And the Rangers have got to be just to be ecstatic and over the moon with the fact that he started throwing so many strikes. So he's going to be an easy one to watch as he goes forward, because it's quite simple. It's kind of like with a first base prospect, like someone like Tyreek Reed and Curtis Terry. These are guys that you actually can sort of scout by the stat line, because first guys like that, you know, they have to hit. If you hit, you advance and you stay.
One tool thing, like you have to get those strikeouts.
And, yeah, and so
yeah, he's allowed what, one home run this season?
Right. And with somebody like DeMarcus, he's going to be pretty easy, because as long as he keeps the walks down, he's going to get K's. Now, obviously, the last report I got, he was 91 to 92 last week. So he's tiring. It's a long season. He's thrown a lot of innings. He's thrown a lot of pitches this year. That's something he's going to need to work on going forward. But he is certainly a dude. He's certainly going to be fun to watch. And he's going to be a pretty easy one to track, because as long as he doesn't walk guys, he's got a shot at pitching in the big leagues.
I love to hear it. So we have had a wide-ranging conversation this evening. We've gone through guys in the big league roster, guys who are on other big league rosters, talking about prospects all around the Texas system. Got some good questions that went through there, I think. I know we have definitely appreciated having you on tonight. Mr. Tepid to talk to us about baseball and children.
It was a pleasure, man. It was a real pleasure, guys. And we'll come back soon and do it again soon.
Yeah. So if you have any a parting wisdom for us, I think this is the time.
Go watch baseball. I always say, nobody ever gets old and says, "I wish I'd have gone to fewer games with my friends and family." It's not. No one ever says that. I wish I'd have gone to less baseball games with my buddies. You know, so get out, go out to games, and yes, it's hot. Yes, I don't care. It's Texas. You live in Texas, so get out, go to the games, and even if you just sit there and bitch about the heat all day, at least you're bitching about it with your friends and your family at a baseball game. So, you know.
But it won't be hot in New York this weekend.
Yeah. So have fun. Have fun out there in New York.
Mike, you go and enjoy New York, and I'm gonna enjoy. I don't know, like the Birmingham Barons. I don't know.
There you
go. I don't have Eli Jimenez anymore.
Hey, is Michael Jordan still play for them?
They talk about that a lot.
Yeah,
like, I'm not kidding. That comes up frequently.
Yeah.
Hey, Eloy Jimenez is here. He was super fun to see.
Yeah.
I got to see a lot of Cubs players from about 15 feet away.
Yeah.
See Chris Bryant,
Dylan Cease.
To smell him. I've seen Dylan Cease. I've seen a bunch of dudes come through here. But
nice.
Baseball is good. You should go watch baseball.
Go watch baseball, everybody. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael.
Tepid participation. If for some reason you don't follow him on Twitter, I don't know how you're listening to this podcast. If you don't know who this guy is, that's very strange. Okay, the one Braves fan who listens to this podcast religiously, follow Tepid participation. It's good for your heart.
Yes.
Everybody else, you're probably already there. If you're not, again, wow, that's odd. But
yeah,
do that.
And listen to Rangers on Deck.
Yes.
Yeah. When we make those are fun.
Those are very fun.
This is some good like concentrated Rangers prospect news. You got to get your injections once every X couple of weeks. Get those things into yourselves. And we've hoped you've enjoyed this rather extra long version of the Rangers Rundown. But there's some good stuff in there.
Great stuff.
Thanks for sticking it all the way through. We will see y'all next time.